from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier calling in to this show from my basement bunker in Dallas, Pennsylvania. Thank you to Skype for allowing us to do that. Rusty Fender and Matt Henderson joining me as always. Gentlemen.
Hey, good morning and thank you, Bill. And of course, here from the Fender Estate in the beautiful Duryea. Of course, we want to wish everybody a happy and safe Memorial Day weekend for those that are lucky enough to have 3 days off. Matt Henderson joins us from our Williamsport Bureau. Good morning, Matt.
Morning, Rusty. Morning, guys. It's he said the kickoff of summer here, and let's hope we have a good summer as things kick off, and see what we'll give.
It can only go up and get better from here, Matt. That's the unfortunate part of you. So you're right. We hope for a good summer, for a long summer. Usually doesn't snow anymore till January or February. So let's try and get the summer underway, and putting this and keeping this show together. The human glue of this program, DC Taylor. Of course, DC is the CEO, the chief editing officer of the Bold Gold Radio Media Group. Good morning, DC.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for coming in and doing a show today and getting some more info out to the people out there. What do we got today?
Well, tons of stuff. A lot of national news going on here. A couple of things caught my eyes, gentlemen. U.S. pipeline safety report reveals fewer incidents, more infrastructure. This, according to NGI. Liquid pipeline incidents have decreased by 36% in the last 5 years, even as the pipeline mileage has almost increased upwards of 10%, according to a recent review. The 2019 Pipeline Safety Excellence Performance Report was issued by the American Petroleum Institute, representing the U.S. oil and natural gas industries, and in partnership with the Association of Oil Pipelines, which represents the liquid pipeline owners and operators. We briefly touched on it last week, but I think it further reinforces the safety, the care, the efficiency that this industry invests in infrastructure. Because at the end of the day, if our product isn't making it to the end user, we're not doing our jobs. Big surge for oil and natural gas futures as production drops further. Cash rallies too. Another story according to NGI. Natural gas futures raced higher Monday, as supply and demand balances finally started to move in a more supportive direction for prices. With a further push from the cash market, the June NYMEX price, NYMEX being the Henry Hub, the standard price across the country, gas future contracts settled up 13.7 cents from Friday's close at $1.78. I'm chuckling here. I remember when I started at Cabot, prices were in excess of $5, $6, $7, and in the winter they jumped into the teens. July jumped 12.6 cents to $1.95, and spot gas prices were sharply higher on Monday, driven by gains of nearly 50 cents in the Northeast. And it's just, we've had some really mild winters, and who knows if we get hit with a big winter this year with everything going on, the prices might jump again. This is something I think the listeners of this program should pay attention to. Biden, Joe Biden's campaign said he would rescind Keystone Pipeline permit if elected. USA Today. Joe Biden, the presidential campaign, said Monday that if he were elected to the White House, he would rescind the Keystone XL pipeline permit. The Keystone XL pipeline proposal was initially rejected by the Obama administration, which included Biden as a vice president, but was approved 2 years later by the Trump administration. It's a pipeline. We started this show talking about how the efficiencies in delivering pipeline and pipeline products is at an all-time high, and I still can't believe that something like this is becoming such a polarized issue in the United States. Can U.S. shale producers themselves find innovative ways to get out of trouble? This is a story according to Rig Zone. The shale industry was in trouble even when oil prices were at $30 a barrel. Hundreds of small producers across Texas and the Midwest were laden with debt, sweet spots already taken, and forced well operators to tap higher cost locations. WTI crude at under $20 a barrel is less than half of the $40 plus barrel break-even price needed by the shale industry. But again, this industry has proven time and again innovation, efficiencies, consolidation, and just the overall shaping of the overall market has allowed the United States and North American producers to really thrive, even when their backs are up against a wall. And I think it demonstrates the strength of free market capitalism. And the more the government stays out of this, and you see that as evidenced by OPEC, and they're oftentimes trying to curtail and change production, things like this, and these national oil companies owned by governments in other states and other countries that just run amok on technology, innovation, and those types of things. And that's why I think the United States is in a good position. But something the United States should be aware of, U.S. shale should be worried about Chinese takeovers. This also, according to oilprice.com, American shale is an easy prey as Beijing goes bargain hunting. China could soon embark on global buying spree following the coronavirus-induced economic crisis and the reopening of its economy. And the U.S. shale patch is an obvious target thanks to unprecedented demand destruction, ultra-low energy prices, and catastrophic debt levels that we just talked about. So it's something we have to be aware of, even in the midst of this virus, of our pandemic and everything around the world. Companies could be taken over by governments that may not necessarily have our best interests as a country in line. And last story here before we get to Rusty's story that he's lined up on emissions. EIA predicts a record drop in U.S. shale oil production. This one also according to oilprice.com. Crude oil production in seven major U.S. shale basins will fall by a record 197,000 barrels per day next month. The Energy Information Agency reported on Monday production in the seven most prolific basins in the United States is expected to fall 7.8 million barrels per day, the EIA said. That's down from 8 million barrels per day this month. It will be a record monthly loss. Rusty, some good news from you. You have a story on emissions.
Yeah, you bet. And, you know, I'm sure that some of you gentlemen either recognize this yourself, but I've had at least three people over the past couple of weeks say, do you smell the difference in the air outside, especially at night? And yeah, well, that kind of goes without saying with this lockdown for the last 8 weeks. Carbon emissions dropped 17% globally amid the coronavirus. The pandemic forced countries around the world to enact strict lockdowns. This is from Fox News. Sealed borders and scaled back economic activities. It's a worldwide drop that scientists say could be the largest in recorded history, not since 1945 during the World War II catastrophe, has since they started keeping track of these things. 18.7 million tons of daily emissions down. The last change was 2006 when 7% was down. So this is truly incredible. Quoting Corinne LeCuir, a professor of climate change at the University of East Anglia in the United Kingdom, quoting here, globally, we haven't seen a drop this big ever at the yearly level. You'd have to go back to World War II, 1945, November, to see such a big drop in emissions. But this is not the way to tackle climate change. It's not going to happen by forcing behavior changes on people. We need to tackle climate change by helping people move to a more sustainable ways of living, including fuel. So that ties right back in here. Emissions from air travel, which experienced a staggering 75 to 83% drop in daily activity, also led to that, of course. And 62% of traffic, cars, trucks, and vans, again, led to this. So it's a terrible way to drive the point home, but the air does smell different, and there's a big reason for that, Bill. That's an interesting story.
It certainly is, and thanks for sharing with it. And as always, it's Rusty Fender's Fast Facts time. More interesting knowledge that you share with us every week, Rusty.
Hey, thank you, Bill. And guys, of course, it's Memorial Day weekend, as we told you at the beginning of the program. Of course, you all know that. Memorial Day began as a response to the Civil War, where 620,000 soldiers died. That is unbelievable, 620,000. It has roots to Bowlesburg, Pennsylvania, back in 1864. After the war in late May, they put flowers on the graves of their fallen soldiers from the just-fought Battle of Gettysburg. Mayor General John Logan made the day official in 1868 after the Civil War. You folks, you guys may not remember this, but I was 10 at the time. Since the 1860s, Memorial Day was called Decoration Day because they decorated the graves of the dead. In 1967, I was 10 at the time, Congress changed it to Memorial Day. So it was always Decoration Day. I remember my mother and father always saying Decoration Day. I didn't know what they were talking about at the time, Decoration Day. Again, this is a very interesting fact that in the South, Memorial Day has its own customs. They still celebrate Confederate Memorial Day. In Alabama, it's the fourth Monday in April. Confederate Memorial Day is the second week in Mississippi of May. And states like Texas and Tennessee observe Confederate Heroes Day on January 19th. The first ride for veterans began in 1988, 32 years ago. 2,500 motorcyclists rode into the Capitol, Washington, D.C., for what they called Rolling Thunder. That was 32 years ago. In 2020, this weekend, 400,000 bikers, many of them veterans, are likely to be actually closer to 500,000, will do the same Rolling Thunder ride on this weekend. They travel 22 miles, and they travel 22 miles for a reason. Since 1988, the ride is 22 miles long, 11 each way. Matt, Bill, DC, why is it 22 miles? Matt?
Well, I was stuck for a little bit there when you're saying you're 10 years old during the Civil War.
No, in 67,
Matt. Oh, 1967, okay. So 22, 11, man, I don't know. I tell you, maybe something to do with the flag. I don't know. I know there's 13 colonies, but I'm going to have to stick with something with a flag or something like that, or that many states involved or something. I'm reaching.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even have a good guess here. I'm going to pass it over to DC.
22 is it's the number of veterans who commit suicide every day, I believe.
Since 1946, a very somber note. Those veterans since the end of World War II with the armistice, those who commit on this very somber fast fact, but we wish you a happy, in lieu of this, a happy and very safe Memorial Day. I know this is going to be a holiday. We will all remember the Memorial Day weekend of 2020 for many different reasons. Bill?
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break on the Shale Gas News. Stay tuned for more after a word from our sponsors.
This is an important message regarding blood donations through the American Red Cross. They are currently facing a severe blood shortage. Healthy blood and platelet donors are asked to give now. Donating blood is safe, and it can help save lives. Blood drives are set up across the state. A few local sites include Anytime Fitness in Tunkhannock, Wilkes-Barre Blood Donation Center in Ashley, Bloomsburg Christian Church in Bloomsburg, North Central PA Red Cross Chapter, Lewisburg, First Presbyterian Church, Milton, Montoursville Presbyterian Church, Montoursville, and Du Bois Town United Methodist Church, South Williamsport. Please schedule an appointment by calling 1-800-RED-CROSS today. Brought to you by community partners Cabot Oil and Gas and GDS.
How's business? This question from Brand Graphic Solutions, where they help grow your business with high-impact creative solutions. Brand Graphic Solutions, or BGS, can help your business get noticed. BGS provides equipment decals, job site signage, directional signage, even CNG decals. They service local, regional, and national brands. BGS also does vehicle wraps, which are really cool and eye-catching, by the way. Or call or visit online at brandgraphicsolutions.com. You want to succeed in business? Don't blend in. Stand out. You can thank me later.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems in Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Pulled pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. I saw this week an interview that Ian Jeffries, president and CEO of the Association of American Railroads, did with Cheddar, the online publication there, discussing the importance of the rail industry during COVID. So much is talked about the airline industry slowing down, but the rail industry, I think, has actually played a very important role, and I don't think people understand and appreciate that. So we're going to share Ian's comments during his recent Cheddar interview right now.
All right, moving on here. We have been hearing a lot about how the airline industry has been hit by the coronavirus pandemic, but how are America's railroads doing? Joining me now is Ian Jeffries, president and CEO of the Association of American Railroads. Ian, great to have you here with me today. How exactly has the coronavirus changed the railroad industry?
Great to be here today. Thanks for having me on. So, you know, as with the broader economy, the coronavirus has had quite an effect on freight railroads. We often say as an industry, we move as the economy moves. And certainly the economy has taken quite a hit and freight rail traffic has been reflected there. When you think about the fact that the majority of automobiles, for example, move on freight rail at some point in their lives, getting from plant to market. Those plants have been shut down, so that's traffic that hasn't been moving on the rails. But I will say that, you know, the industry, I think, has been performing at a very high level. Service has been strong. We're moving critical goods to marketplaces. We're moving key goods that are used to purify water at water treatment facilities, grains for export and import use. So the industry is moving strong. We are a critical infrastructure industry based on DHS, Department of Homeland Security's guidance that it put out earlier in the year. And so our folks have been working 24/7 nonstop delivering for communities all over the country.
As you alluded to, the rail system provides a huge link for supply chains across the mm-hmm. globe. How has this system really transformed to prioritize delivering things like personal protective equipment?
Right. So, you know, we go as our customers go. So anything our customers need to move, we're moving that. And certainly that includes essential goods and supplies for health workers and communities used in fighting the COVID-19 pandemic. A lot of that is what we call intermodal traffic. So it's containerized goods, goes from truck to train to truck. And that's continued to flow at a really high level. What we haven't seen is a lot of that international traffic coming in through the ports, but critical supplies for healthcare workers, even you know, groceries, et cetera, consumer goods, all things that communities need during this time are absolutely flowing on the rails and flowing into those communities.
To that point of groceries, railroads are also vital to making sure food does get from production to people's grocery store shelves. Mm-hmm. But this specific supply chain, especially when it comes to meat supply, seems to be breaking under a lot of pressures. How are railroads adapting to increased demand of certain products and a breakdown in that supply chain for other products?
Right. So our industry, you know, we've been around a long time and we've learned to be very resilient and react quickly. And so we're able to flex up and down based on customers' needs. And our railroads also have very close relationships with their customers, with the shipping community. And so, you know, they're able to pivot quickly to meet those needs. And I'm proud to say they've done so at a very high level to date. You know, the shipper community has voiced a lot of positive words about the service they're getting because, you know, now more than ever, we need goods flowing. Like you said, we need a supply chain that's healthy and one that can meet the needs of America. And that's certainly what our railroads are doing right now.
Yeah, it kind of feels like to me it might be challenging to rework or be agile when it comes to railroads. Forgive my ignorance, but can you just kind of help to elucidate how quickly you are able to make changes when supply chains are changing, demand is changing, and supply is changing?
Right. So all that comes into scenario planning. And, you know, as I said, our industry has been around a long time. And part of that is planning for, you know, we have pandemic planning teams, we have crisis response plans, we have, you know, scenarios put into place that allow us to react and readjust and realign our services based on the scenarios and the reality that develops around us. So I would say it's really a product of a lot of long-term planning that's occurred over the years and also quite a bit of investment into our systems. Railroads will invest about $25 billion back into their networks every year. And so that's got the network itself in a really healthy position that allows us to get goods across the country quite quickly.
What about when it comes to transporting people? We've been hearing that the onus for summer vacations, according to a lot of experts we've talked to, will be on domestic travel. Is that something right. railroads are able to gear up for this uptick in demand?
So when you're talking about passenger rail, you're really talking about Amtrak being the primary passenger rail company in the U.S., and Amtrak's certainly taken a hit. You know, not unlike the airlines, they've seen their passenger counts drop, you know, upwards of 80-90%, but the railroad has continued to run, has continued to run well, and I know they're working very hard and are fully prepared to start ramping back up online. I believe the popular Acela train from Washington, D.C. to New York will be starting back up June 1st, and of course, putting in necessary sanitary protocols and social distance protocols. So, you know, any consumer-based industry, you were just talking about the Nike storefronts earlier, any consumer-based industry is taking those steps to make the necessary changes to make sure people can be safe, and passenger rail is certainly one of those as well.
Do you think some of those safety measures that you highlighted that Amtrak is taking, like face coverings, is going to be mandated industry-wide, and do you think those kinds of precautions are kind of here to stay even after the pandemic dies down?
So I would say our industry didn't wait for any mandates. We've required face masks and increased cleaning, increased sanitation, all in lines with CDC guidance since that first came out, and even had, as I referenced earlier, plans in place beforehand. And that includes social distancing in the workplace. And, you know, I think that's really borne fruit in that the industry's really been able to continue to operate at a full level by keeping our employees safe. And of course, employee safety is always priority number one in an industry like ours. But I think you're certainly going to see, I'm not one to speculate, but I think it's fair to assume you're going to see a lot of those measures that were put in place for the foreseeable future. We want to make sure folks are safe. We want to make sure that they're healthy. And, you know, we'll continue to take those steps, whether it's through CDC guidance or beyond that, to make sure that everyone's as safe as they can be.
Ian, thank you so much for your insight and for your time. That's Ian Jeffries, President and CEO of Association of American Railroads. Thanks.
Again, that was Ian Jeffries, President and CEO of the Railroad Association, sharing his comments on the importance of the rail industry during COVID. I want to switch gears now and share some recent commentary from Congressman Guy Rushenthaler, who recently sat down with George Stark. But before we do that, I want to give Matt Henderson a chance to talk about an upcoming Think About Energy briefing. Matt?
Yeah, Bill, thanks. So as you mentioned, we have you know, some comments coming up here from a recent webinar we did on Think About. So as with everybody not able to convene in real life, we've been doing some webinars, and we have a great webinar next week on Thursday, May 28th. We're going to talk about the Pennsylvania budget, economic policy, kind of reopening PA. And we have Senator John Yudichak and Senator Gene Yaw, who will be on and talk a little bit policy. And we also are lucky to have Gene Barr, who's president of the PA Chamber. So again, they're going to talk a little bit about the reopening PA, the budget time, of course, we're in that season again, and give some good information on their thoughts of what we can do to get the economy rolling again. So more information, you can go to our website, thinkaboutbriefing.com. Look forward to you can register there, or you can watch these as we record them and post them online. So again, thanks, Bill, and hopefully we see everybody next week.
Great. And I look forward to participating in that one and some of the future ones that we have lined up. We're going to now share a recent discussion. George Stark sat down with Congressman Rushenthaler following the most recent Think About Energy briefing to get to some more of the topics we just ran out of time during the Think About. So I hope you enjoy.
Welcome back. You know, we had a very successful Think About Energy event this week, and we ran over with questions. And it's wonderful that Congressman Rushenthaler has taken time out of his busy schedule to come back and share with us some of his insights. Congressman, I can tell you that the reaction to your presence on the event on Tuesday was overwhelming. A lot of folks were excited to be exposed to you and to understand your deep knowledge and how you're advocating on Pennsylvania and truly the nation's behalf in D.C. So hat tip to you on that. And
thanks, George.
It was critical that we definitely saw folks asking, you know, the national security questions. One of the questions that was brought up was, you know, from your standpoint, do you see a lot that we could be doing to, again, not just bring back from China, because we're going to address that one, but specifically pharmaceuticals? You know, you've got a hub in Philadelphia and New Jersey, but you got a feedstock of energy here in Pennsylvania. I don't know if that one is something that you've looked at, what we can do to try to get those jobs into Pennsylvania and bring them back onshore.
Yeah, absolutely, George. And thanks for inviting me back. I really appreciate it. And I had a blast when we were talking earlier in the week. We're just looking at pharmaceuticals in particular. It's really shocking that we've let so much of our supply chain move to China in particular and overseas in general. So I think that we need to look at doing a few things. Generally, we need to make sure that we incentivize these companies to come back to the United States to manufacture here. And I'm not talking government handouts. I'm talking about a competitive tax structure, making sure that we reduce regulation. And again, I talked about this earlier in the week. If we just get out of the way and let natural gas, the natural gas industry, produce cheap and abundant natural gas, we'll reduce the cost of energy, which will in turn lead to abundant petrochemicals and abundant cheap energy, which will again incentivize companies to move back home. But we could take a look at increasing our strategic national stockpile of these pharmaceuticals in the short term to make sure we're not relying on China moving forward, or any foreign nation for that matter.
And I think that's the critical piece. I mean, again, we can no doubt look at China, but when you're, you know, in a pandemic, when you're stuck relying on somebody else, you know, my mom and dad taught me that's probably not a good thing from a common sense standpoint. So appreciate the insights on the pharmaceuticals. I will tell you, as I look these questions over, and, you know, it was clear that it was on several people's minds, the idea that, you know, we are too dependent on China. What can we do with cheap Pennsylvania energy? What about infrastructure? And bottom line, what can we do to break that stranglehold specifically from China when you think about plastics, PPE, all that? What can we do to ensure that Pennsylvania, the United States, is dominating in attracting business here, but also in the process breaking that stranglehold that China specifically has? So I'll throw that one over to you.
Yeah, George, you throw a lot at me, but let me try to handle each in turn. When it comes to making sure we get our supply chain back into the United States and domestically again, we've got to make sure that we reduce the barriers to business. Again, going back to having a competitive corporate tax structure, regulation reform, so we only have regulations that are absolutely necessary. We want to invite people here to do business. That will go a long way. But we got to remember that China is not playing by the same rules, and that is giving them a huge advantage. We invited them into the World Trade Organization years ago, and since that time, they have not abided by the rules of the WTO. They've actually gone out of their way almost to violate it, from stealing our intellectual property, forcing companies to do forced intellectual property transfers when they move their businesses to China to get market share in China. That's all illegal. They also dump raw materials into the United States, steel in particular, carbon. We've seen that happen. Aluminum, they've dumped into the United States, which is a predatory practice. And then not so much recently, but 5-10 years ago, they also were heavily involved in currency manipulation. So we've got to hold China accountable on that and make sure that if they do step out of line and they do get out of step with the norms of the WTO, we should hold them accountable. I'm very happy to announce that earlier today, Leader McCarthy put me on a China task force. We were supposed to have this task force back in February. It was getting rolled out. It was supposed to be, I think, 3 or 4 Republicans, 3 or 4 Democrats. And Nancy Pelosi just stalled on this. And now, because she has not gone forward with the steps to stand up this committee, Kevin McCarthy has done it on his own. And I'm lucky to be on that committee. But my focus on that committee is making sure that we hold China accountable, not only for this current pandemic, but for the economic fouls that they've committed leading up to that. So I think that's a lot of what we can do to hold China accountable and move our supply chain back into the United States.
You know, again, I love the idea that you chose to join us and for us to learn something new today also. It is crystal clear that you are the right guy for the job of taking on the WTO and holding China accountable, because if you think about it, your district, you know, it's steel, it's natural gas, it's manufacturing. Again, from the preponderance of questions and the participants that we had on the call, you know, they really were hopeful and want to help you succeed in being that force behind you to hold China accountable. So I guarantee they'll be happy to hear about what it is you're doing as a result of this But it's clear that you now have, from our standpoint, that's a big deal, having manufacturing, getting Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, all engaged. We're one region, and we could be stronger. So we'll continue to share with you the questions that we've got. We appreciate your opportunity to come back on. I just want to provide you one last opportunity as we wrap up here, just to anything else that comes to your mind from the event on Tuesday or today. I truly appreciate your time, sir.
Hey, thanks, George. I really appreciate it. And if you want, I just want to end on this. You know, people are really fearful about where we're moving in the future. We're the United States of America. We're going to get through this. And I think when we get on the other side, we're going to be stronger than ever, because we've been through World War One, World War Two. We had a civil war and a revolutionary war, and we still got through it, right? We had the Spanish influenza, and the fundamentals of the economy are still the same. We've seen the flaws in the system with our supply chain and our dependence, unfortunately, on China. So when we emerge from this, we're going to be stronger than ever. And I really want to thank all of those that are in your industry, because we're going to lead it right here in Western Pennsylvania and across the United States, because our oil and gas gives us so much clout on the international stage. It gives us the ability to move those supply chains back to the United States. So in a lot of ways, we are controlling our destiny on the international stage because of the American factor. So thank you.
Well, again, thank you. Know that we stand behind you. There is hundreds, thousands that make their living in the energy industry. Our goal is to cause people to think about the energy and what it means. Have a leader like you in DC is top notch. We're grateful. Appreciate your time. We will remain in touch. Thank you again for your time today, Congressman.
Thanks, George. Take care.
And again, that was George Stark from Cabot Oil and Gas talking with Congressman Guy Reschenthaler. You can find more discussions on the YouTube channel Think About Energy Briefing. And of course, right here on the Shale Gas News, we'll have more of this show coming up in just a few. Stay right there. This is an important message. Are you or someone you know experiencing a food shortage? Please stop into Trehab Food Banks. They're here to help. In Susquehanna County, Trehab Food Banks are located at 81 Industrial Drive in Montrose and 1226 Main Street in Susquehanna. Trehab, a community action agency. This message brought to you by community partners Cabot Oil and Gas and GDS.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Lindy Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindyco.com. Lindy installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindyco.com.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
This is an important message. Life is full of unexpected events, and Interfaith is here to help during those times. With the spread of COVID-19, the coronavirus, and expected medical and economic impact, Susquehanna County Interfaith reminds the community of its core mission, which is, in part, to provide emergency assistance to any individual or family in need. Whether you need fuel to get to the hospital, or you find yourself with an eviction notice, or worse yet, homeless, Susquehanna County Interfaith is here to offer you help and hope. Their goal is to help families and individuals achieve self-sufficiency in the long run. During the COVID-19 crisis, Susquehanna County Interfaith continues to provide these services to those who are in need. If you need help, please call 570-278-1776. That's 278-1776. This message brought to you by community partners Cabot Oil and Gas and GDS. Welcome back to the Shale Gas News.
Welcome to the Energy Update for the week of May 18th, 2020, presented by the Institute for Energy Research. I'm Alex Stevens, and joining me over the phone is IER's Deputy Director of Public Policy, Jordan McGillis. Jordan, what do we have going on this week at IER?
Thanks, Alex. Our recent work has taken a look at how the coronavirus pandemic has affected energy markets at a rather granular level. In our recent coverage, we've highlighted how 2019 looked and how 2020 was forecast to look. And then we've assessed the actual data and we've discussed how things have drastically changed. So with respect to 2019, it was really a banner year for American energy production. U.S. production in 2019 was higher than its energy consumption for the first time in 62 years. Some people would call that energy independence. What we mean when we say it at IER is that the U.S. is now using less energy that it's produced than it's producing. So there's that opportunity for export, and we're reliant less upon energy that's produced elsewhere and less reliant on energy that is subject to geopolitical turmoil. So that's very good news. In fact, total U.S. energy production was up 5.7% in 2019, and demand was slightly lower than in the previous year. So some positive motion was afoot. But of course, that has really changed in the last few months. We're now seeing that demand is dropping precipitously, as we would expect, as people are remaining in their households and less trade is going on. In the first week of May, petroleum demand was 15.35 million barrels per day, which was 25% lower than it was at the beginning of March. So in two short months, we've seen about a quarter of petroleum demand drop. And of course, the consumer level impact of that and the consumer level experience of that is that people are using less gasoline. Household vehicle travel across the contiguous U.S. fell by about 70% when you compare the first couple of weeks of March with the first couple of weeks of April. So very, very significant drop. And as a result, prices are very, very low. And there's a need for a lot of petroleum to go into storage. And so we're seeing on that side of things, increases in crude oil inventories. As of the end of April, the Energy Information Administration reports that U.S. commercial crude oil inventories, excluding those in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, are at about 500 million barrels, which is 12% above the most recent five-year average for this time of year. And at that level, inventories may soon pass the record set, which was in March 2017, of 535 million barrels. So there's a lot of crude being stored right now. But there are still positive developments going on in the energy world. Recently, a new alloy, Alloy 617, was added to the American Society of Mechanical Engineers boiler and pressure vessel code. This is what sets the standards for nuclear reactors in the United States. And this new inclusion in the code means that Alloy 617 can be used in the design and construction of the next generation of nuclear reactors that are being developed. That will include molten salt reactors, high temperature reactors, gas cooled and sodium reactors. And this alloy is useful because it has an ability to maintain its strength at high temperatures while simultaneously resisting corrosion. It's also remarkable for its lack of creep, which means that unlike some other metals, it doesn't change shape over time at high temperatures, which is an essential quality for new reactor designs that operate at twice the standard temperature rate. So Alloy 617 is a bit of good news amid a lot of negative news, unfortunately, on the energy side of things as we deal with this coronavirus pandemic.
Great. As always, those articles and all this information can be found on our website, instituteforenergyresearch.org. And one last thing I want to highlight for our listeners is tonight at 7 p.m., the American Energy Alliance is hosting a watch party of Michael Moore's new controversial film, Planet of the Humans. And for our radio listeners, this event will have already taken place by the time you're listening to this, but there's a ton of content on IER's website covering this. I would particularly recommend a blog post by IAR senior economist David Kreutzer titled, "We Disagree With You, So Shut Up," where he talks a little bit about the documentary and points of agreement, disagreement. You can find that article and all this information that we've discussed, once again, instituteforenergyresearch.org. Until next week, I'm Alex Stevens.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and me, DC Taylor. And we turn now to another discussion that George Stark from Cabot Oil and Gas had, this time with Congressman Fred Keller. Congressman Keller answering questions from the about energy infrastructure, pipelines, and how we could ultimately get Pennsylvania's natural gas to the rest of the country. And again, this, you can find this on the YouTube channel, Think About Energy Briefing. So here's here's George's discussion now with Congressman Keller.
Well, welcome back. Yeah, we had a wonderful, successful Think About Energy event yesterday. We were blessed with many participants, as well as several questions that were not able to be answered during the broadcast. And we're blessed that Congressman Fred Keller has chosen to rejoin us and help us with some of the questions that really fall into his area. So, number one, Fred, thank you for taking the time to rejoin us, sir.
Well, I want to say I appreciate the opportunity, and I really appreciate being able to communicate with all the people involved in the natural gas industry, the producers, the people that do the transmission distribution, and ultimately the people that are going to benefit from the abundance of affordable energy.
And it's clear, sir, that yesterday there were several questions regarding infrastructure and pipelines. And then one that really sort of fits near and dear to you is with your district butting up against New York, there was a lot of questions that came into the standpoint of, now that we see that Boston has to import natural gas from foreign sources, Russia, is there anything that you can share with us that is your view from Washington, D.C. that's being done to maybe help streamline, help force pipelines to get built? Because it's obvious that Pennsylvania, your constituents, would benefit that we can get this natural gas from Susquehanna County to Boston. So anything that you can share with us from your standpoint that you know that you're working on to help get these pipelines built?
That's actually a great point, George. And I just want to say that when we look at this, it's not only just helping our district, it certainly helps all of America when we talk about energy independence and not transferring U.S. dollars over to Russia and actors that don't support our values and our interests. And really, that's really what our message has been. And another thing that we're working on with any infrastructure bills, we're also looking at what we can do, you know, as far as interstate commerce, being able to make sure that, and that's sort of how I've been looking at this and the things we've been looking into, to treat this like interstate commerce. It'd almost be like, if New York didn't want an interstate highway coming through, they'd say you got to stop Interstate 81 at the Pennsylvania border and you can't come across, up to Binghamton. You got to stop there just north of Scranton. It's not practical. And when we're talking about infrastructure, we're not just talking about roads and bridges. We're talking about all those things you don't see too, which is pipelines. And so our discussion has been on what we do to make sure that this is included in any infrastructure project as far as pipelines. Been a huge, got a lot of support for that. And then also looking at some of the avenues, because I know there was some court decisions and things going on, but looking at what this is for interstate commerce, which is certainly within the purview of the federal government to make sure that we have states that allow that commerce to happen freely between states and across our borders. So those are the things we're really pushing for, to try and make sure that our natural gas gets used rather than Russian natural gas in New England.
Yeah, well, it needs to say, we appreciate that, because, again, there definitely needs to be that coordination, that mandate from D.C. that, again, states cannot stand in the way solely to block development, especially at a time when you may have a manufacturer who can create or manufacture a ventilator in New York, yet they're being held hostage and they can't get natural gas. So that is definitely something that we need to see happen. Congressman,
if I can just jump in.
Yes, sir.
If I can just jump in, George, and, you know, you're talking about manufacturer of ventilators. And, you know, when we talk about natural gas development and making sure pipelines are available to help manufacturers, it's also making sure, too, that, you know, some of the other things that are made from the products in natural gas and petroleum products, you know, the people understand that we have Penn State University is helping with 3D printing and making, you know, masks and shields for PPE. So there's a lot of things that are happening. And I think that there's members of Congress and other political figures, and I'll point to New York State, that need to understand. And when I point to New York State, I'm talking about the Green New Deal and the governor from one person wanting to get rid of fossil fuels and the other person not wanting to have these pipelines, you know, travel to New England. And again, I would tout the environmental benefits of a pipeline, a safe pipeline, which I know everybody does very well. You're not continually expending fuel to transport this natural resource to where it's needed.
Understood. A great point, and I appreciate you making that one. And again, as you are debating the laws proposed and hopefully enacted in D.C., I know there is an effort for many of our industry to help see a new pipeline safety bill get passed. So again, something that we could use your assistance on getting that bill put forth.
Yeah, and again, I'm George, from our conversations, and I would think that the other energy producers are in the same spot. I mean, you're very supportive, and the industry is very supportive of that initiative for safe pipelines. I'm correct on that assumption.
You are absolutely correct on that assumption. It is paramount on our industry to move our product in a safe manner. We make certain that we're adhering to all the guidelines we're sharing through the American Petroleum Institute, API, to make certain that standards are built and ensured to the highest quality. That's what we want to see put in to legislation that would require a safe pipeline and an integrated system. So, yes, that is the effort the industry supports, backs, and wants you to know that, again, we love knowing what the standard is and we love exceeding it. But again, the law would be putting forth the expectations and would be able to meet it. So any assistance you can provide as that bill makes its way through would be helpful also.
Yeah, absolutely want to work on that. And there's an important point I want to point out to people when we talk about natural gas and moving. I know a lot of people talk about, you know, leaks and you know, other things. And they seem to think that the natural gas industry doesn't care about when the gas leaks into the environment. You care very dearly, because that's just like letting dollar bills leak out of your pipeline. So, you know, again, the thing that natural gas companies, at least in my mind, would be is you care very, very deeply about the standard. One, you want it safe because as a product you use, your employees, the company, is in these communities. So you want the community safe. You want to make sure that the maximum amount of gas gets delivered to where it's going to be used. And so those profits from every bit of that gas come back to the company. And I want to make a point, if I may, that the people that own natural gas companies and so forth are the people that go to work every day, not just for the natural gas companies, but people that invest in their 401k and their retirement accounts. So I think it's an important point to know how this all fits together. And I really appreciate, you know, the opportunity to communicate these things, because I think there's some people that don't understand that the success of a gas company is many things. One, it's affordable energy for people. And you know, we want to make sure we help people that on lower income scales, they can afford energy, which means if it's not expensive, they have money for other things. It helps people's retirement accounts because they're invested in these companies. And it helps the communities and the people that work there with family sustaining jobs. And the reinvestment that I've seen Cabot do in the Susquehanna Career and Technology Center, you guys are helping with the CDL school, things that might not even just come back to the natural gas industry, but our community as a whole. And I really appreciate the work that's being done by Cabot, other energy producers, just in all those areas.
Well, Congressman, again, we can't thank you enough for your participation yesterday, your ongoing leadership in Washington, D.C. We worked closely with you when you were in Harrisburg, and you've taken that same aggressive nature to D.C. We're benefited, and again, you understand our industry. We're Our goal is to make certain we stay in front of you with concerns and any legislation we see necessary. Appreciate your open door with us. Again, thank you so much. And now that you had a chance to sort of just look at all of yesterday with your two colleagues, GT and Guy, I'll give you a last minute. If there was something else that you wanted to add that didn't get addressed yesterday. And with that, we'll wrap up, sir.
Yeah. Again, I appreciate the opportunity. And I will say this about the delegation from you know, my colleagues, GT, Guy Rasenschaller, and you know, everybody, outstanding public servants. They understand what we need to do to work together from a national security point, from supply chain, you know, just from our communities in general. And we're really fortunate to have them as part of our team. One other thing I did want to mention, and it's a big help, understanding the natural gas that's in PA-12, the work I've done in Harrisburg and have taken down to Washington, D.C., being a member of the House Energy Action Team, the HEAT team, I was very glad that the Republican Whip put me on that, so that our issues that benefit not just Northeastern and North Central PA, but benefit our nation are in the policy discussion when it comes to, you know, whether it's interstate commerce, whether it's trade with foreign nations, national security. Our energy interests are first and foremost. And again, as part of the HEAT team, we've actually had some input when we had some of Saudi Arabia and Russia trying to destabilize the energy market, and the president and being able to negotiate those agreements with OPEC Plus, but really to make sure that our energy industry remains as strong as it was and continues to flourish. So thank you for the work you do. I appreciate the partnership very much.
Needless to say, it's our pleasure. It's obvious that you do take the opportunity to think about energy. You've come back on to answer questions. We will look forward to having you on future events like this. And again, we're going to do all we can to continue the conversation about energy, the importance of it, how it underscores our economy. Thank you, Congressman, and thank you for all those that wrote in your questions. It is our goal to be as open as we can with information to get the information out. So again, thank you for joining us. We'll go off from here. Enjoy.
Thanks.
That again, George Stark from Cabot Oil and Gas, talking to Congressman Fred Keller. And again, you can look up that YouTube channel, Think About Energy Briefing is the name of it.
It's now time for the Marcellus Drilling News Top 5. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from across the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer on this show to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list each week, sends them over to us. Here's a summary of the top 5 stories. U.S. land rig count falls to 369. Marcellus loses another 2 rigs. The crash in the drilling rig count continued last week for the 9th straight week, although the decline slowed for a 3rd week in a row. U.S. oil and gas rigs for land-based operations fell another 29 last week to a total of 369 active rigs. Most of the decrease comes from the oil-focused regions. However, we noticed a disturbing trend in the Marcellus rig count. 3 weeks ago, the Marcellus lost 4 rigs. 2 weeks ago, we lost 1 rig. Now, over the last week, we lost another 2 rigs, both in the dry gas northeast corridor of Pennsylvania. There are 7 rigs laid down in 3 weeks, 5 in the dry gas region, 2 in the wet gas region. Jim highlights what the heck is going on. Rusty?
Work on the new Fortress LNG export plant in Wyalusing heats up. We have some exclusive news to share about a northeast Pennsylvania LNG plant project. Now, in August of 2018, New Fortress Energy announced plans to build at least one LNG liquefying plant in Wyalusing, Pennsylvania. The plant will cost $800 million to build and use some 500 workers to build it. Work began last year to clear the site in preparation for construction. Now, the big news is New Fortress has resumed work on the site as of last week. From what we can tell, no one else has reported this news. A trusted local eyewitness source relayed an overview of what he observes happening at the site, which we shared in this post. Matt?
Okay, the origins of diversified gas and oil from 1 to 60,000 wells. We've always found diversified oil and gas a fascinating company. Diversified strategy is to seek out wells in, quote, the long tail. That is, wells are already well along the decline curve. In the first 2 years after shale well is drilled, it produces something like 75% of all the oil and gas that were ever produced. As time goes on, production greatly tapers off. Diversified strategy is to buy conventional and shale wells that are along the decline curve. They make money buying up those wells, kind of like buying an annuity. The wells will keep on producing and paying a steady stream of income for decades. Diversified makes more in profit than it costs them to own and maintain the wells. And it takes far less manpower and time and capital to buy rather than to drill new wells. So they buy and they hold. By our reckoning, Diversified now owns roughly 8 million acres of leases, over 68,000 conventional wells, and roughly 500 shale wells in the Appalachian Basin. But how did the company get started, and how has it grown so rapidly since going public in early 2017? The answer is not really how, but who. Rusty Hudson. The BBC published an interesting profile of Hudson and the birth of Diversified. Rusty?
Number two. Matt Cuomo rejects the NSC pipeline again. Williams, what? Is it time to turn the gas off for New York City and let the people there reap the benefits of having a dictator, Andrew Cuomo, as their governor? On Friday, the New York Department of Environmental Conservation, thoroughly and completely corrupted by Cuomo, issued yet another rejection for the critically needed Northeast Supply Enhancement Pipeline project. It was the last straw for Williams, the builder of the project, who has walked away from the project. Gas customers on Long Island, including parts of New York City, now face the real prospect of running out of natural gas. This is not an exaggeration. Andrew Cuomo is the grossest, most corrupt governor in New York's history. As soon as New York delivered its rejection of NESE, New Jersey's equally corrupt Democratic governor, Phil Murphy, did the same. It was a coordinated attack on the project, Williams said in a statement that they will not refile for the permits at this time. That's a euphemism for we're walking away from this project. Screw you. We concur. Bill?
Rusty, coming in at number one, EQT shuts in 33% of its natural gas production in Pennsylvania and Ohio. The nation's largest natural gas producer, EQT Corporation, is temporarily curtailing or shutting in roughly one-third of its natural gas production in Pennsylvania and Ohio. So says EQT's main midstream pipeline provider, Equitrans, formerly EQT Midstream. Equitrans recently issued its first quarter 2020 update, which we reported last week. Equitrans update was also officially filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The SEC gets a little touchy about the reports it gets. Investors make decisions based on those reports or filings. They have to be accurate. Equitrans filed their latest 10-Q quarterly report last Thursday. The 10-Q includes guidance on what the company expects in activity and revenue in the coming months. A day after Equitrans filed its 10-Q, the company received notification from EQT, its main customer, that EQT would immediately begin, starting May 16th, to shut in or curtail production at some of its wells, resulting in a decrease of 1.4 billion cubic feet per day of natural gas flowing through Equitrans pipelines. Last week, MDN also reported that EQT's first quarter 20 results. And in that update, EQT said it averaged 4.2 billion cubic feet of production in the first quarter. If you run the math, shutting in 1.4 billion cubic feet represents about 33.3% of EQT's production. And there you have it, folks, the top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email at marcellusdrilling.com/email. It is now time for the Lackawanna College job segment, where you go to find your future, sponsored by the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Rusty.
And thank you, Bill. And in Pennsylvania, you got a few here. Dominion Energy looking for welders. That would be Flux Core Stick Shielded Metal Arc. That's out of Renovo, Central Pennsylvania. Penn Hills Resources looking for a geologist. It could be a geologist or a PG. A professional geologist is acceptable as well, out of Bradford County. New Pig Energy looking for a SCADA analyst out of Pittsburgh. And GR Energy looking for wireline operators, that's plural, out of Delmont. Now, in Ohio, TRC companies looking for a gas distribution engineer based in Toledo. Ascent Resources looking for an operations engineer for their facilities and production division. That's headquartered in Cambridge. Iron Mountain Specialists, roustabouts, plural, hired hands, out of Barnesville. And First Energy, a professional co-op, looking for an intern as well. That's an intern is acceptable, out of Perry. West Virginia, Apex Energy Services, a shop mechanic based in Wheeling. Also based in Wheeling, Deepwell Energy Services looking for diesel mechanics, plural.
Gray Rock Energy, looking for a well tender out of Charleston. And Diversified Gas and Oil has an opening for a measurement analyst, also headquartered in Charleston. In New York State, Fisher Associates, a GIS analyst for mapping, that's out of Buffalo. Rochester Gas and Electric, looking for gas fitters. That's also, of course, out of Rochester. The New York Power Authority, looking for an assistant fuel contracts analyst out of White Plains. That's Westchester County. And A-Plus, an HSE specialist, of course, health, safety, and environmental, based in Rochester. And those are the jobs this week, sponsored by Lackawanna College. As Bill mentioned, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. We thank you so much for finding your future here on this Memorial Day weekend. We certainly hope you have a long 3-day weekend, a happy and a safe one from all of us here at the Shale Gas News. On our network of stations, GEM 104, WEJS 1600 AM and 104.1 FM in Williamsport. For Bill DeRosa, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Have a happy and safe Memorial Day weekend from all of us here at the Shale Gas News.